My name is Jill Coyle, and from years of experience as a divorce attorney, I know for a fact that no one dies from divorce. The experts and I are here to show you how to not only survive, but thrive during the most difficult times.
Welcome to another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. I'm excited about today because it's a little bit different than what we've done. We've never had a business negotiation strategist on our podcast. So Christine McKay, I'm so excited to have you here today. Welcome.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I kind of just want to introduce you to our listeners. And today we're talking about why not ask, a conversation about getting more. And I love this because it can be this conversation is something that people need to have in every walks of their life. And I always talk about the crucial conversations that we talk so much about in employee, in relationships should be taught in all of our relationships. And so, so this topic is just something that can be just a life skill. Let's talk about it.
Awesome.
So Christine is a business negotiation strategist, and she's the author of Why Not Ask, A Conversation About Getting More. She's worked on behalf of numerous small and mid-sized companies and negotiated with many Fortune 500s. Christine's academic career culminated with her earning an MBA from Harvard University. Her early career was in international mergers and acquisitions. She's led various deals, including multiple privatization deals in Eastern and Western Europe, and has negotiated key strategic alliances in Southeast Asia. You've launched the Venn negotiation with a passion to find common ground, level the playing field, and resolve complex issues for her clients. So, wow. What a resume. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. I also, just so you are aware, I was divorced. I was divorced many years ago, did the whole single mom thing for quite a while. And I've helped a couple of my clients through divorce. So I think we're going to have a really great conversation today.
I love that. And the personal experience obviously brings the empathetic approach. But, I was just saying, like, negotiations, crucial conversations is something that we should all be doing within our lives. And we're here to talk about that and talk about why it's so important. So Christine, I kind of want to know, like, tell me a little backstory and how did you kind of get to where you are?
Well, backstory started out pretty rough. So I'm born and raised in North Central Montana from a tiny farming and ranching community. So I'm a country girl at heart. And I had a really successful high school and then a career. And then I left high school and kind of life fell apart. And I found myself unmarried and pregnant and living out of the back of my car and thought I needed to be rescued. And so I met a man who thought he needed to rescue me. And so we kind of had a marriage made in hell, but we had two more kids. So I had three kids at the age of 22. And I was on welfare for over a decade. Used to do my grocery shopping at the local food bank or at the church pantry. Mm-hmm. Went without heating in my house in the dead of winter in Western Massachusetts, and decided I wanted a different life for myself. And so I left my first husband, who was very controlling and abusive, and went to community college, went from there to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, where I was the first woman to graduate as both a full-time student and a single mom. And from there, I started working I went to work for what's now Verizon in marketing, and I hated it and found a way to do more numbers-oriented things, and had then remarried. And my husband, Keith, and I now we'll celebrate 30 years of marriage this year. And wow. And then I launched a career doing international mergers and acquisitions, decided in order to move further, I needed to get an MBA. Harvard was the only university that universally, wherever I went in the world, everybody knew Harvard. Mm-hmm. And so it was the only school I applied to. And then I went from there to a large consulting company and then into sales and procurement and then started Venn Negotiation. So we are essentially the center, the negotiation center of excellence for small and mid-sized companies. And we help them negotiate with organizations who they perceive as having more power and leverage. And there's a key word in that description there, and that is that they perceive as having more power and leverage, which I imagine a lot of your audience finds themselves in.
Right, right. Your story is absolutely amazing. And I hope all my listeners out there are hearing this because, you know, wherever you are in your story, it doesn't need to be the end, and that can just be the most important beginning. And it doesn't matter if you're getting divorced right now, or you've been on food stamps for 10 years, or, you know, not able to pay for your heat. Right now is the decision that you can make to change that. And Christine, you're living proof of that.
Everything comes down to the choices we make.
And I like this because, you know, you say negotiation isn't about winning. It's a conversation about relationships, and you can't win a relationship. I absolutely love that. Tell me more about that.
So, I mean, it's in business, people think about negotiation as winning, and we teach this to our kids. You know, we tell people that they have to give, but we don't tell people how to teach our children how to receive. You know, so we create this bifurcation, this, you know, us and them dynamic. And that gets perpetuated. It gets perpetuated in how we socialize with our peers as we're growing up, and it continues. And, you know, we get told, even if when I'm speaking, when I do public speaking and I ask people, you know, if I say left, what comes next? It's always right. If I say yes, then it's no. If I say win, then it's lose. This notion of win-win, and I'm honored that I was taught by many of the you know, amazing minds behind, you know, getting to yes and, you know, getting past no, which are two seminal books in the negotiation space. But the concept of win-win has really become kind of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink, I'm the big player, I'm the one with the power, I'm the one with the money, I'm the one with the job, I'm the one with whatever it is that I think I've got more power over you. Win-win is when you accept what I tell you as being the case, and that's it, and we're done, right? And what I found, I started my career in negotiating outside the United States, and I am so grateful that I did that, because it gave me the opportunity to see how different cultures approach the conversation of negotiation, mm-hmm. and how they approach the conversation of relationships. And it's vastly different. And because I started in Southeast Asia in the mid-1990s, when I was in my late 20s, and there were no women, or virtually no women, in business in Southeast Asia at that time, I had to learn a different way. And it couldn't be a go in and try to win. It had to be a go in and try to understand. And from that understanding, then I could build a relationship that would allow me then to be more rigid in the areas where I needed to be more rigid, more demanding in the areas where I needed to be more demanding. But I could also be giving and more soft in the areas that weren't as important to me and to my company at the time. And I found that to be the case in so many areas of my life. And, you know, and now the work that we do is really about helping others to benefit from that kind of ideology, that experience that I learned throughout the working in over 55 countries. So,
yeah, I think one of the biggest things I've learned as a divorce attorney is that one of the biggest problems in marriages is the stories we tell. And Brené Brown is probably the best person that talks about this, about the stories we create on what we hear other people say. And it usually is completely different. And it's not what they're saying. And it's, and so you're not able to react and give them what they need. And you guys are just, you know, crossing paths on communication to each other. And when I went to marriage counseling for the first time with my husband, I remember that was exactly the thing that I thought that the therapist was going to look at my husband and be like, you know, you're doing this wrong. And she's been telling you all along, and you need to just correct this pattern. And what, you know, we realized is that we were just crossing, you know, we had no idea what the other person was really saying or needing. And we were so caught up in our own beliefs. And so when I think about how crucial communication is in all aspects of this life, that's exactly what I, if we could learn as human beings to hear what the other person is saying before we react, could you imagine what human race we would be? So I would assume a big majority of your business is listening and hearing or understanding that need.
It absolutely is. And you know, what you raise is something that I think is part of the negotiation conversation that gets completely and utterly ignored in most corners. And that is the role of emotion in negotiation. So my belief is that emotion is an involuntary response to a past experience that we're feeling in the moment, in the present. And once I realized that how I felt about something had nothing to do with what I was experiencing in the moment, but had everything to do with something that happened. I literally just was on a phone with one of my mentors who's done a lot to help me overcome trauma and work through really limiting beliefs. I was like, this phone is really heavy to pick up for sales calls. And why is that? Because when I was 5 years old, it was just like ludicrous what came out of my mouth. I'm like, what in the heck? Had nothing to do with the conversations that I want to have now. It had everything to do with this thing, these stupid things that happened when I was 5 years old, whether, you know, it was a teacher who did something or one of my parents said or did something. And it's really powerful to be able to pause and go, oh, okay, that feeling I'm having, it's tied to this other thing. And I get to choose whether I'm going to react to this thing from, you know, many decades ago, or am I going to react now? I'll use an example. This was a few months ago, coming up about a year ago now. I was on a call in the middle of a negotiation with somebody who I call a Southern gentleman. And we were on Zoom, just like we are right now. And he said, I don't know why anyone would ever hire a woman to negotiate. Everybody knows women cannot negotiate. And I was like, I'm feeling a few things.
Right.
I'm feeling a lot of things right now. I was feeling angry. I was feeling marginalized. I was feeling demeaned. I was feeling less than. I was feeling all sorts of things because I'm a survivor of a lot of trauma. And I went, you know what? How I would normally react feeling any of these things is this way, but that's not going to serve me right now. So what can I do instead? Now, that's not like a long thought process. It's like, oh, that's not going to serve me. I could get mad. I could react. That's not going to get me anywhere. How am I going to respond instead? And so I responded by saying, is it okay if I ask you a question? Do you mind if I ask a question? Of course, of course. What reaction were you hoping to achieve by making those statements? Right. And in that moment, I'm no longer in the emotion. I'm now out of the emotion. I went from the back of my brain, from the limbic system to the front of my brain. And now I'm in an action mode. I'm like doing something. And as soon as I take action that's contrary to the emotion that I feel, guess what I have that he didn't have? I had power. I had power. And I really believe that our power in negotiation comes not from manipulating the other person, convincing them to give us what they have that I want. It doesn't come from any of that. It has everything to do with coming from a place of knowing so intuitively what it is that drives you, what pushes your buttons and how you're going to move forward, that you get to choose how you're going to react to a situation. That is the ultimate power in my experience at the negotiation table and in any relationship, but the relationship first has to start with me.
I love that. And one of the things when you're talking about like, what relationship are you in? Like, what dynamic are you in? I think that is important for us to start there. Like, how do you get clarity in your relationship?
With myself or with others?
Well, I think a lot of us, like, when they hear the word negotiation, they don't want to think that that would be a proper time in a marriage. Or that it should be a proper time if I'm a subordinate and my boss, you know, is reaming me or whatever. Like, a lot of us use the word negotiation as like, oh, that's only when you're getting divorced, or that's only when you're, you know, in this certain circumstance. And I'm like, no, the art of negotiation comes with every relationship we have. And just like you said at the beginning, it's about understanding our power and our dynamic. So when I say let's get clarity in the relationship, I mean, like, what is our value? How do we find our value in the relationship that gives us that strength to then be ready to communicate?
So
does that make sense?
I think it does. And I think that so I have this saying, know your values before you know your value. In order to know your value, you have to understand what your values are. And when I think back to my first marriage, one of the things that I realized is that our values were not aligned. Mm-hmm. And if I had assessed that early on, that might have saved a lot of heartache and anguish. But at the end of the day, our values being so different and what his expectations were of me and my relative to my expectations of me and vice versa, we were not going to be able to overcome that. And so I couldn't understand. I didn't think I had any value in the relationship because I was constantly just being told what I couldn't do and how dumb I was and how this I was, all of that BS. But once I understood, once I started to connect more solidly with my values and I don't mean I'm religious or I'm not religious. I mean, like, what matters to you? What's important to you? I bore three amazing daughters and I have three amazing women as my kids now. And, you know, when I look back at one of the values as I was having, as I was spitting out daughters, I was like, I showed up in the world to them was one of my most critical values. I wanted to show them that as a woman in this society, that I could do what I want. I could be what I want. I got to define myself, not have somebody else define me. I couldn't do that if I was being told who I could talk to, what I could wear, and what my whole day looked like. I mean, there was a disconnect in that value to the value that I wanted to be living for my kids. And so I think so. And I find this to be true in business too, is that businesses don't know their values. And when they don't understand their values, they don't have a sense of their value either. They can't grasp that. You have to know your values. That's the first and most important part to knowing enough about yourself to be able to determine whether the relationship is worth having or worth saying goodbye to.
I love that. And one of the things I think is important is that your values can change. What you had as value at 19 when you were pregnant and having your daughter for the first time is clearly not going to be the value of what you need right now. It's so important as human beings to continually to cultivate those values. And I talk a lot about this with women, especially. We tend to start forgetting about ourselves altogether. We take care of everybody else, including our kids, including our husbands or spouses. In business, we've been known to forget ourselves and take care of others, which is a lot of reasons why we hear people, why women, first of all, lead the charge of getting divorced, because they wake up and realize that they need to figure some stuff out. But then second of all, I think a leading cause of failed relationships in whatever. So I love that. I mean, continue to find your values, and they can change. They don't have to be the same. But by knowing your values, you know your worth. I absolutely think that's precious and really great advice. Because I wanted to ask you, like, how do you really get what you want in business, which is going to translate and in relationships? But I'd love to hear your take on that.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to sound a little bit boring, but you have to ask for it. But the problem is that we oftentimes don't know what we're asking for. And so we ask in a really general way. So we're not specific enough. We're not clear. We don't have clarity. And we expect people to take action on some general amorphic idea. You got to take action. You can only take action on something specific and clear. Like in business, it's like, I want to have that thing, you know, I need that thing done. You know, I need, you know, whatever. I don't know. I need that document done. All right. It may be a really important priority for me, but it may be a really low priority for you. So when do you need it done? Is there a specific way that you need it done? You know, do you need it to look a certain way? Because what's going to happen is I'm going to go off and I'm going to do it based on the priority I give to it and the importance I give to it. And if we haven't communicated effectively what your level of priority and importance is and what your expectations are, and I go off and I just perform based on how I think it is, we're going to have a problem. We're going to have a disconnect because we haven't spent any time taking a moment and asking about expectations. And let's say that document is something that's super important to you and you need it in 24 hours. Oh, and by the way, it's for the most important client in the firm, and it has got to look like it rolled off the best graphic designer in the world, right? In 24 hours. Well, now, if I know that, now I have the opportunity to say, I suck at graphic design. I am not your person, but boy, do I feel the urgency. How do I help you find the right person? Mm-hmm. Now, guess what I just did? I couldn't deliver on your expectation, but I still added value because I offered to help you find the person who could.
Right.
Right. So I said no. I said no. No, I cannot do this. I suck at graphic design. I said no. I love the word no, because it frees me up to help you find the best alternative to me available.
Right.
Right. And that's what no does. And so I think that we have to have more clarity, and we have to communicate more clearly, and we have to give each other the space to say what our limitations are. And we have to get really comfortable with the word no and understand what an amazing, powerful, awesome word no actually is. Yeah. No is the word that lets us live our lives to their fullest, not yes. I think no is that word.
Yeah. So tell me how you have taken some of these negotiation tactics into your marriage. I mean, you said that you've been married 30 years now. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you have a lot of, you know, light and wisdom that you could give our audience. So talk to me a little bit about how you use some of these techniques in helping your marriage.
Well, I have to say, I mean, the pandemic for my husband and I has been amazing. It was amazing because I got to spend time with my husband and got a window into his world that I would never have gotten before. And it was just such an honor to be able to see that part of his universe and to see him operate in his kind of zone of genius. And it was just a real treat, but not always. And we had some moments. Early in the pandemic, we were both trying to work from home, and he had built me, because he wasn't working from home at the time, he'd built me this really beautiful desk, and I was working in this desk. And by the way, we live in a big loft mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, so we have no doors except to bathrooms. That's the only doors we have. So I'm working at this glorious desk he built me, and he's working at our little tiny round glass kitchen table, right? Not comfortable at all. He is an engineer, and he's in his head most of the day. I'm a negotiator consultant. I'm on the phone all the time, and I do public speaking and podcasts and video casts. Yeah. So I'm talking all day, right? So we're trying to work in the same space. And I was networking with somebody he was from Los Angeles. I'm from Los Angeles. And he kind of asked me where I lived, and I kind of told him. And my husband shushed me. Like, it did not go over well in my head. I was not happy. This was an important person. He was a seasoned professional. He's really well connected. And it was completely audible that I had been shushed from my husband. So I started feeling things, because it took me back into my first marriage about getting shushed and told all
the meaning.
It did not go over well. So I'm feeling some things again, because, you know, we are emotional creatures, every last one of us. And so I get off the phone with this gentleman, and my husband is angry, because he felt that I had told this strange guy where I lived, and he was worried about my safety.
Yeah.
I felt demeaned and belittled by being shushed.
Right.
So we had to have a conversation about what he was afraid of and why that precipitated a certain behavior, and how I felt and why that precipitated a certain behavior. And then we got to choose, what are we going to do about it next time this happens? If something similar happens like this, what do we do now? What do we do that next time? Right. So I think that for us, it's been being able to acknowledge how we feel in the moment, to be able to recognize that that feeling isn't necessarily about what's going on right now, but that it's my husband's feelings are very much rooted in his past and the stories he has created out of that past. And then it's like, okay, what do we do now? Yeah. And what do we do going forward? Right. So that we don't get stuck in the past. And that's really an important component of negotiation, because a lot of people will try to keep you stuck in your past when you're negotiating, and they'll keep you in fear, and they want you to stay there only until you have to come into the present to make a decision to do one thing or the other. Then they're going to try to put you in your past or make you terrified of your future. And that's, we get to choose whether or not we're going to do that.
Yeah. I love that. The stories we tell each other. One of the things that I talk about in my book is, like, I'm surprised when I have people that come in my office, and it doesn't happen very often, but I get those people that are really not able to articulate the reason they're in my office. Meaning they don't know that it's one specific thing that's wrong. That kind of was the precipice of saying I'm done. And a lot of that. So I come back and I'm like, does your husband or does your wife know you're here? And when, you know, do they know a divorce is coming? And when I get those, you know, no, they don't, it's always a little like jarring to me. Like, wait, how are you able to ever expect to fix a marriage or a relationship if you're not talking about what is going on? And that's why that's one of the pieces of one of my chapters in my book is, have you told each other what you are feeling so that the other person could have the chance to try to hear what they need to hear to change? And so your book, you know, like, why not ask a conversation about getting more? I mean, my first thought is, you said this before, like, if you're negotiating in work, they're never going to negotiate with you unless you ask, right?
Exactly. And it's very true in our personal lives. It's true in every aspect of our lives. You know, we get to a point where we think we know. We think we know what they're thinking. We think that this is what they mean. And, you know, we get defensive about it because I know my husband. I know this is what he's thinking. I know this is what he's thinking. I know my wife is going to do this if I do this, mm-hmm. right? Well, baloney, you don't know. You just think you know, because one time that may have happened that way, and maybe it'll happen that way again, and maybe it won't. How would you know? Right.
Yeah.
And so we get so invested in making up garbage in our own heads and believing the BS that goes through our heads. I often say that the hardest part of any negotiation happens right between these ears, the 6 inches between my ears. That's where the hardest negotiation happens.
Yeah.
And usually because I'm either convincing myself of some garbage story, or I'm telling myself, oh my God, they're just not going to understand. And it's like, well, how are they going to understand if I don't tell them what the heck's going on? Right.
Exactly.
They won't understand. And so we have to start, and we have to start, you know, I was just talking to somebody about risk, trust, and honesty, right? And if we perceive that we have a lot of risk in the relationship, right, but we think we can't be honest or trust somebody, then guess what? We reduce the amount of risk we will invest in order to match the amount of trust and honesty we have. If right. we have a very little risk in the relationship, no matter what we do, nobody will ever perceive our risk, our trust and honesty any higher than the amount of risk we are going in. It is a triangle, and it either expands together or it shrinks together.
Yeah.
But we can't have more risk than trust and honesty, or more honesty than trust and risk, and vice versa. And I think that if, when we forget that and we get comfortable in our relationships, we assume that there's no risk. And then that trust and honesty part starts to go away too, because we don't think there's risk in the relationship. I want to say a thing about, you know, when people say, you know, no, my partner doesn't know I'm here, right? I always say in negotiation and in relationships, a bad deal for you is a bad deal for me. I just may not realize it yet. And I find it really, as a matter of fact, I've never found it that somebody really can say that completely took me by surprise. There are always signs that a relationship is struggling, and we choose whether or not we want to pay attention to those signs and take mm-hmm. action on them or not. I think that for those people, when they say, oh my God, it took me completely by surprise, or they're really, you know, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know what I'm looking, but they react really, really strongly. And oftentimes that's because they don't realize that relationship was fractured to begin with. And there were probably some misalignments of values, and this is going to be a good thing for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And with every relationship, I mean, I always say this, like, a relationship is based off of you. Like happiness only comes from you. Your relationship does not bring that. And a relationship can elevate that happiness, but truly your spouse is supposed to be there to be your biggest cheerleader. So they're supposed to take who you are exactly the way you are and say, I love you just the way you are. That's a true relationship. And so many people are just clinging to the idea that their relationship is necessary for their happiness. And that's just false. It's just like if you work for big corporate America and you believe that this job is the only job that you ever can find value and that nobody else is going to find value in you, then your company will treat you exactly that way. But if you believe that you are a value and added asset to that company, you know your worth, just like you said, Christine, you know your values, you know, and you negotiate with your company why they need you, I promise you, you will be so much more valued, whether it's in that company or another one. And that's exactly what you need to believe in your relationships. If your relationship is bringing you down and keeping you away from happiness, probably not a relationship worth investing in.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that, you know, we've been sold a bill of goods, right? Culturally. We've been sold the fairy tale. And the fairy tale, that's just not real. I mean, I look back at my husband and I's first year of marriage, and keep in mind that, you know, when we got married, my daughters were 3, 4, and 5 when we started seeing each other. So that I think they were 5, 6, and 7 when we got married. So my husband was insta dad. We poured a little powder on him and poof, he was a dad. And my ex-husband wasn't really totally in the mix, and he was occasionally around. When I went to Harvard, he sued me for custody of my kids. He claimed child abuse. It was a whole thing. And, you know, but my husband was there through all this stuff. And, you know, my kids consider him very much their dad. But when I look back at our our second year was even harder. We almost didn't make it out of that year too. Year two was... it was brutal. Mm-hmm. I had started traveling internationally. I was gone for weeks, sometimes months at a time. And he was home with 3 kids who biologically weren't his. And, you know, we negotiated early on. He had a view that two parents, his value was that both of us cannot have really successful careers. One of us has to be okay being good at what we do, but largely being 9 to 5, because one of us, and it was his value, one of us has to go to doctors and parent teachers conferences and bake cookies and do, and you know what? I had a higher earning potential. And so in our house, that was him. He did that work. I didn't do that work. We negotiated that up front based on values, right? And our values were slightly different. I believed that both of us could have glorious careers. And then he showed me after our youngest daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, you know what? That was not going to be possible for us. Both of us couldn't have, you know, shoot out of the cannon, fireworks, awesome growing careers. One of us had to be home, making sure that she was taken care of and healthy. And I'm so grateful and actually oddly feeling a little emotional about how grateful I am that we had that conversation early in our relationship so that we knew what that deal looked like. And then when the deal started to switch, I took time out. He started having a career that was growing, and I had just gotten laid off. Our kids were just coming into the teenage years. I was a mom who my values were that I wanted to be the parent to have drugs, sex, and rock and roll questions. I wanted to be around. I love teenagers. From the moment they were born, I was like, could you please be 13? I just want you to
Christine,
be a teenager.
You and me are like sisters. Like, I am the same way. I'm like, give me my 14-year-old over my 5-year-old any day.
Oh my God. I just love it. And so, you know, that at that point, I stayed home. I built a business from home, and my husband, his career started taking off. Right. And so having those, and that's not a simple conversation, whose career's going where and doing what. And it's the tendency is to go, we can have it all. We can do it all, but something's got to give, and who gives. And in most families today, as we've seen through the pandemic, it's the woman's whose life gives. It's, you know, we're back at 1983 levels of women in the workforce in the corporate America, which is disgusting to me.
Yeah.
Because no offense, guys, many of you guys didn't stand up and step up and help. And to those of you who did, I love you. And every woman on the planet loves you. But women couldn't be, moms couldn't be teachers and, you know, caregivers and, you know, maids and do a corporate job at the same time. And so having that negotiation early matters. It matters a lot. And it sounds like a simple thing to have a conversation about, but it's actually really complex. And that's the truth of any real negotiation. There are tons of variables. And whether it's parenting and being a partner, or whether it's in a business, there are lots of variables. Stop haggling in your relationships and actually sit down and negotiate them and have difficult conversations.
Yeah.
That's what human beings are really gifted at doing. That's what separates us from every other creature on the planet. We get to have difficult conversations. How privileged is that? That's like amazing that we get to do that.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I love that. And that's the best part about that entire thing, is that the negotiations don't stop. Whether you're married for 3 years, married for 30, like, they continually need to be coming up. And those crucial conversations you have to be having with your spouse, you have to be having. And that's why I always say, okay, divorce happens, but what did you learn from your divorce? If you can learn from your divorce, hey, I sucked at it as a communicator, so I'm going to work really hard to communicate now. Because you think communicating hard with your spouse or your spouse is hard in the marriage, it's even harder after the marriage. So becoming that crucial conversationist, somebody that is able to understand this art, Christine, that you've written about, that you built a career off of, will make you a better person going forward. And it will make it so you can handle any of those conversations, whether it's with a teacher, a doctor, an employer, you being a boss, a future relationship, or most important, with your kids. And gonna make you a better person. So let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to be right? Is it more important for you to be right, or do you want to be effective?
Yeah.
Do you want to build relationships, or do you want to beat somebody over the head with the "I told you so" kind of stuff? You know, again, it's a choice. We get to decide what we're going to do with that. I love being wrong. It's one of my favorite things, because if I'm wrong, it means that I get to learn something. It's an opportunity. If I'm right all the time, I have zero opportunity to grow and improve and learn. So I love being wrong. And trust me, my husband and my kids tell me all the time, and that's great. And I work with one of my kids, you know, and I work with one of my kids, and she's amazing. And, you know, I heard her feelings this morning. Our beginning call was her telling me that I had said something on Friday that upset her, and she was really emotional about it. And, you know, so we talked about it, and then we agreed that she wouldn't wait 3 days. So she lost 3 nights of sleep, because it was not necessary. Call me and let's talk about it. Right. I think that creating that environment that says it's okay to not be okay all the time. And you can have, like, the strength of your relationship comes from being able to say to somebody, I'm not okay with what you just did. And these are the reasons why that bothered me or that upset me. And then you have the chance to say, like, she heard something and I'm like, I have no idea how you got to that point. I do not know how you got from there to there, but you did. And I respect that that's where your brain went. Now let's just walk that back and let's talk about what I really meant and what you'd never have to worry about.
Yeah.
Right.
And, oh my gosh.
And it's just so important to have those with anybody that you have a relationship, best friends. You know, when you miss an appointment, it's like, fall on your say, I'm sorry. Apologize only for those things when you really screw up. Don't say I'm sorry all the time. But when you really screw up, I screwed up. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to screw up.
Right? Yeah.
And
it's going to cultivate also to deeper relationships.
Yeah. I missed one of my best friends. I stood her up for lunch and I completely forgot the appointment. She was really angry. And it affected our relationship. And I found out that I had a medical condition at the time that was causing my memory to go faulty. And so I got on the right medication. We got to have a different conversation and all was great. But that ability to be able to do that and give each other space to say what's working and what's not, is just so important. It's just so important. And I tell my clients in their contracts, you have to have language that says you're going to every year, you're going to sit down and say, is this relationship still working for us? If it's not, what's not working and how do we go about fixing it? Do we not, and if it's something significant, we both have the opportunity to say, you know what? It's so big to fix it. It's so broken that the effort to fix it is too much for us. We don't have the resources, the capacity, the brain, whatever, the energy, whatever it is, right? And then we get to change. And then guess what? It's like, okay, how can I help you find a better person to serve you?
Oh, that's so good.
Right?
Where can people find you? I mean, so, I'm excited to read your book.
So the book is on Amazon. Why not ask a conversation about getting more? They can find me on LinkedIn at Christine McKay or at VENNNegotiation.com.
That is just fabulous. This has just been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for being on here. And I know that it's going to help my listeners and just people in general. So Christine, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jill. It's been an honor. I appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who tuned in.
That's another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. Tune in next week. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice. For listening to this episode, if you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice.